Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Okay, we are back with another episode of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts, the GOAP. I'm your host, Alex Espinoza. I'm glad to be joined by the creator of Uprooted Oakland. Wait, shit, hold on. I should actually get the name of it. It's Uprooted Oakland, right? I should get this right.
Yeah. It's Uprooted. Twitter has Uprooted taken, so it's Uprooted Oakland. I'll take either.
Yeah, Uprooted. Yeah, so Uprooted Oakland on Twitter. All one word. This is James Carroll, the creator of it. He's been grinding since April, pretty much every day. I don't think you've taken a day off, it seems like.
Yeah.
So James, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All the honor goes to you for even considering me. Going after Melissa is a tough act to follow. But
yeah.
And somebody can click on this.
Where's your insider info, man? I demand some insider info.
I can make some want. It's trade deadline season, so I could just throw anything out there. Someone might pick it up and say, "Hey, you know, on this podcast, they talked about
sources.
Juan Soto is going to go for Montas, Murphy, and let's throw in Max Muncy, and that's the hot." Hot ticket.
Yeah. Soto to the A's, confirmed. Yeah.
First. Yeah.
Well, dude, so yeah, I'm curious. Like, are you from the Bay Area? You've been a lifelong A's fan. Like, what kind of inspired you to start the account in the first place?
Yeah. So I grew up in Hayward, which is not very far from Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've lived there most of my life. I'm still in the Bay Area now. I've been going to games for a long, long time. My dad's been a season ticket holder or partial season ticket holder for a long time, a little different this year, but just been following the A's nonstop. I'm a big sports guy in general, but my passion is with the A's and watching baseball. And just, I know a lot of my friends and my family, maybe not my dad, but other family members don't really get how we're 101 games into the season.
Yeah.
My wife is like, how are we, how do we have 60?
Yeah. There's still 60 games for you.
That's insane. But it just whips by for me. Every single year, the off season, it just crawls and, it's just, I just love the A's. Probably part of that is the proximity to Oakland, but, my family's always been A's since the A's came. I am disappointed to say that I formerly had some Giants fans in my family, but they've since been converted. And that's like the old school pre-A's days.
I was just going to say, like, I love your account, man. You've been putting in, you've been live tweeting, doing a lot of play-by-play. You were all over the draft.
Yeah.
Your sick quote graphics, like the final score graphics. It's an awesome account, so I highly recommend. Like, you're all over it. Can't watch a game, I just go to your account and see what happened, because you give the detailed play-by-play. I love it.
It definitely been a goal, because like there are people that cover the A's still, but it's not nearly as in depth.
It's like two people. It's like Matt Kawahara and Martin, and if they have a day off, it's like you have to find who's covering the team that day.
It's nuts too, because like I get it, because there's usually a boss upstairs that's saying, hey, we want you to dedicate this much energy into this portion of your job. Yeah. And, the Susan Slusser days are unfortunately over, where she's like just on it. Yeah. And it's nobody's fault. It's just kind of the way that it's gone on A's Twitter. Yeah. I think kind of like step one is just to make the season fun, is to talk about the season, even if it's torture, find fun parts of torture.
Yeah.
And that's what the A season is.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you were saying before. There's kind of like a lack of coverage in general. And that's kind of why I started this blog a couple of years ago. It was like a quarantine project. And I was like, I have nothing else to do. I'm watching the A's every day anyways. I might as well do something about it, So
yeah. Well, I get it. It's like you're turning like, I don't want to say useless hobby, but you're kind of just like, man, I'm dedicating this many hours to it anyways. Let's try to create something with it.
yeah,
and sharing the experience. Yeah. And it just makes, I'd like to think that just by talking about it, it inspires other people to talk about it. Even if it's just like a one-off frustrated reply tweet, or, you know, someone else wants to cover it in a very similar way or contribute whatever, because there's a lot of aspects yeah. of the coverage stuff that I don't know how to do, and I'm not going to pretend I know how to do. I mean, the older I get, the more out of touch I get. So if someone wants to make like A's TikTok and take off there, I'm not touching that.
Yeah. Yeah. But also it's funny, because now I've realized once you start something like this, it also becomes a monster too, right? It's like the flip side too, right? So like,
absolutely.
Because you're doing all your own graphics and everything, right? So that yeah. like, even like doing the concepts and coming yeah. up with all that, it takes a while to get there, right?
Yeah, like, it took a long time. And I was like, one of my problems as a person is that I want the start to be just super streamlined. I want it to be, this is the logo I'm going to run with. Yeah. And I might change it down the line, but I don't want to be changing the logo 6 times in the first week. Yeah. I want the launch to be the launch. And if it's not going to be close to perfect, then, you know, I don't really want to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of made this tough, because I'd been thinking about doing Uprooted for, you know, probably long-term, like 2 years. Yeah. I kind of took a break off of writing when my first son was born. But, you know, I was like, hey, about a year ago, I was like, hey, I'm going to sketch out some logos. I'm going to just make a list of the things I got to do, and try to nail this out. And my first thought was like, I'm going to launch this the last day of the season, or, you know, somewhere around yeah. that last year. And then I was like, maybe that's not a good idea. Let's hold off.
Yeah.
And we had the lockout.
Lockout, yeah.
And it was, oh, wow, this is not great. Not great timing. There's not a lot of interest in baseball right now. And then, we're opened up again, but the A's are going to trade everyone. So if there probably isn't a worse time to start something like this in a lot of ways. Because I came out of the gate thinking like, hey, if I can get to 500 followers by the end of the year, then it's a huge success.
Yeah.
As you know, there's not a whole lot of reason for people to tune in.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know.
Like I'm going to do it regardless, but for anyone to care about it, care about me watching it. No. Yeah. So it's been, you know, it's super gratifying that people have jumped on and joined in. And I'm thinking, even as the A's are kind of streaking now, that there seems to be a little more positivity, and
I'm getting more engagement on my stuff too in the past week, dude. Like,
great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, yeah. You like put out, you know, hey, the A's are down 9-1, but we made a sick defensive play. You get like 2 likes on it. But if it's a home run that busted open in the 8th inning, everyone loves it.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, please, A's, do something. Yeah. Do anything.
Yeah. I mean, how are you feeling about, I mean, this is probably like I know there's still like, what, 25 games under 500, whatever it is. Like, they're still abysmally under, what is it, 36-63 or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like somewhere right around there. I don't know. But like, they still got to be feeling great, right? 6-2 after the break. They just swept the Astros. Steph Curry was just in their locker room. Like, morale is probably at like an all-time high right now, even though they're like,
which is amazing, because of the way that they were trending, you kind of figured that by the trade deadline, that there'd be like this gloom and doom of, man, how many more days do we have with Frankie? Man, are we going to lose our leader in Sean Murphy? We are, in theory,
still could happen.
It could happen, but at least now it's like, hey, we're feeling pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
We're excited about it. Let's live it up. Let's enjoy the time we've got. It doesn't feel like they're kind of, because there's other teams that just feel like, I mean, you look at like the Cubs right now, and they like know the writing's on the wall. And like, you're seeing them have like these sentimental send-offs practically like in the dugout during there's none of that.
That
you've at least seen on TV. That people aren't like hugging.
I think because there's some uncertainty. Because I think, you know, David Force has come out and said like, we don't need to trade Frankie. We'll do it for the right deal or whatever, you know? So it's
kind of like,
I don't think anybody really knows, honestly. I don't even think the front office knows, dude. You know,
they don't. And I think they're trying to really play up the we don't have to do anything, so you need to overwhelm us.
That's smart. I mean, that's good. Yeah, I mean, it's a smart,
it's good negotiating. They're gonna say it, but I think the reality is that the A's want to move pieces. At the end of the day, the question is X player going to be able to contribute to the team in 2025 when we hope to be competitive? 2024, 2025, whatever you think it is.
Yeah,
Frankie, probably not, just because I highly doubt that by that time the A's are going to extend him. So the writing on the wall is that he is going to go. Sean Murphy's kind of a little bit of more of a wobbler because a lot more control.
And Langoliers is also making that a little different too, you know?
Yeah, it's just, there's so many factors into it. I mean, even just like the thought of like Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani being on the market at all, I'd imagine that teams are just like, look, I could trade like my, you know, top, like number 4 through 8 prospects to the A's from Montas, or I can keep some of those guys and hopefully package it into a bigger deal for one of these other guys. And do I really want to sell out for Montas when I could have a shot at Soto?
Yeah.
It's just kind of a weird spot.
Yeah.
I mean, like, who would have thought even like 4 months ago we'd be like, hey, Soto and Ohtani might be on
the dude. It's so, yeah, now like Trout has like a back thing. It's like, dude, what is happening, man?
And then the A's are just rattling off all these wins and storming into the playoffs. Baseball's upside down.
Well, dude, I was Ben Ross had a funny tweet yesterday. Like, he's a local sports broadcaster. Yeah. He's done a lot of A's and Giants stuff. And
yeah,
he had a funny tweet. He's like, yeah, A's are 6-2 since the break, and Giants are 0-7. It's just like,
oh, man.
Like, the A's are more – they're the more entertaining team, because even when they lose, it's like entertaining losses, you know? It's like the A's are like – like, you know, that other game was at 11-9 or whatever. They scored like 8 runs, but they lost. Like, I don't know. It's still like fun, you know?
It's madness. And that, I think that's what made the first half of the season so disappointing. Outside of like that initial road trip where they like win 500 and shocked a lot of people.
Yeah, they were like 10-8 at one point. And I was like, this is the high water mark of the year. Yeah.
Whoa, Kevin Smith is a monster all of a sudden.
Dude, I was a believer. Yeah.
He's keeping pace with Chapman. Maybe we made a great trade. I still have love for Kevin Smith, and I think he could be good. He's great defensively, but like, it felt like, hey, this is exciting. A couple of those Rays games felt insane.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just like weeks of, hey, are we gonna get 4 hits today?
Dude, that was a brutal stretch. Yeah.
Oh man, it felt like, hey, we got 4 hits, and 3 of them were singles.
Yeah, like May and June, basically. It was basically like that, basically all of May and June, I felt like.
Yeah, it was brutal to watch, and really, I mean, even as like a diehard, it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Hard to watch. And
it's just almost like you have an addiction. You're like, well, I have to watch because it's on TV, but I don't want to, but I have to.
Like, hey, I'm this far into the season. I might as well watch. It can't get worse than this. And that's kind of my approach with a lot of things, is like the home record. They like that home record. Like all-time bad. They were on pace for the worst home record in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
And now it's better, but at the time it's just like, you know, this is so bad.
I mean, if they're losing in Oakland, it's even worse, because that place is just you know, graveyard or whatever.
Going you to win it is just, man. But obviously things are turned around a little bit. So all I really wanted out of the season was a little bit of excitement. Kind of coming into it, I was like, hey, I want, obviously, let the kids play at some point. I didn't think that was going to be right out of the gate. It was a pipe dream to think that like Langoliers would be called up in May. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. But let the kids play at some point, which I think can still come and probably will come, depending on how this trade deadline goes. Try to upset some teams like we have the last couple of weeks. We've seen it. They've upset the Astros. They've been exciting, competitive against all the, even when they faced the Yankees, they looked pretty good. It was exciting.
Yeah.
But just be like that underdog that is like a thorn in the side going down the stretch. Like, you know, it's hard to dislike the Mariners more than the Astros, but make it hard for them, because they made it hard for the A's down the stretch last year. Like, serve it right back up. make this, you know, have these like fringe guys that have been made fun of all year come through in August and September just to make life hard for all these other teams. And it's exciting to watch because you're going in and you can't be hurt anymore. Like that's just how it is. Like Lou Trevino goes out for the ninth and he blows a save. It's whatever. But when he doesn't blow a save, it feels real good.
Dude, it's almost like clockwork. He comes in, it's like something's going to happen. Like you just know something is going to happen. Like I bet he's only had a handful of clean innings all year.
Oh, it's absolutely. And it's crazy because like you're watching it and so many times it's like just blows him away. Three pitches and just like sick break. The fastball's got movement. The batter looks like they're swinging underwater. And then the next batter is like, that was solid contact, but you know, good hard line out. And then walk a batter on four pitches and then give up like a 500 foot tank. And you're just like, oh, I have no idea how to interpret any of this.
You were talking about like, trying to find excitement in the season. I think for me, the biggest bright spot this year has been Cole Irvin. I think he just looks like, whoa, is this like Mark Mulder? Like, what happened? Like, it's crazy.
He and Blackburn in a lot of ways are similar just because like neither of them have incredible, incredible stuff. But they are confident in what they throw and they are going to throw it and they're going to go up.
They just know how to hit their spots.
And they don't change their approach based on who's coming up. I mean, like the way that Cole Irvin, and I know it's a lefty-lefty matchup, but Yordan Alvarez, when he comes up to the plate, you'd expect someone like Cole Irvin to, with his stuff, to maybe, you know, not come right at him, but he comes right at him. And that
92 cheese, dude. Yeah.
Yordan can't handle it.
Yeah. I know. It's
great. I love watching him pitch.
Yeah. Cause I was looking at just some numbers today. I think for pitchers who have under a 3.50 ERA, he's the only guy with less than 100 strikeouts, and he has like 75 strikeouts. It's like he's like finding a new way to pitch, and it's like. Then I went to his baseball savant page, and it's basically his walks. Like he's like 90th percentile on walks.
Yeah.
Everything else, he's getting battered around. Like he's like in the 20th percentile, but
yeah, it's crazy. He makes it work.
Yeah, he knows how to. Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of Brett Anderson, in a lot of ways. But he's just been a little more dependable. And
that's a really good comp. Yeah. Like the good Brett Anderson.
Brett Anderson's stuff and approach, but he doesn't get injured nearly as much.
Yeah.
And his home numbers are insane. I mean, like for
like the opposite of Blackburn.
I thought the same thing. I was like, kind of going back to the trade stuff, Blackburn and Irvin may get some interest. I don't know how much interest, but would you be more interested as a potential suitor in a team, in a pitcher that was dominant at home or dominant on the road? And I don't know what the answer is.
Oh, like, I don't think they would. They wouldn't care about that. Do you think?
I mean, somewhat, because like, I mean, obviously it depends how deep you're going to dig into it, but hey, Blackburn hasn't pitched great at the Coliseum, but if he plays for the, you know, insert team,
the Cardinals or whatever,
he's not going to play. He's not going to play at the Coliseum a whole lot.
Yeah.
Blackburn's not pitching it well at home. Maybe it's he gets jitters at home, and maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe he won't be able to pitch at Yankee Stadium or whatever else.
Oh man, I just got a message saying we only got 10 minutes left, but maybe we'll. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if we can make it through. Oh, yes.
What about you?
What's your bright spot? I mean, like what's like getting you most excited, you know?
Oh, just one bright spot. I think right now it's gotta be Sean Murphy just turning it around because there was so much, just so much expectation. Like, hey, we're giving you the reins for this offense. You're going to be hitting in the 3 or 4 hole every single day. And now you get the shot to hit 25 home runs and knock everybody in and be a clutch hitter. And May and June were absolutely abysmal for him. He couldn't hit. And then he was even worse with, it felt like every time we had runners in scoring position, Murphy would just shrink. Yeah. And it was a bad feeling because it was like, man, I know you're better than this. And it's just not working. And then like the dark days of like, even with this team, he was hitting in the 7 hole and the 8 hole. And I was like, you know, this is really bad. Yeah. You know, maybe he's made a mistake, but he's swinging with confidence now. He takes big boy rips every single time he swings.
I love his, dude, when he connects with one, it's so beautiful. Like, he's like a really pretty right-handed swing. It's hard for a right-hander to have a pretty swing, but he does, dude. Yeah,
it's a really pretty swing. And honestly, this is a weird thing to say, it's a very pretty swing and miss. Because he does that. He like swings through and like brings his upper arm biceps over his head. His whole body's into it. Obviously, yeah. I prefer that he connects with it, because then it's really
his feet like can't even stay on the ground. His everything just torques. It's crazy.
I think that he's a more balanced hitter right now, which is good, because like a couple months ago, you'd watch him and it's just like the low stuff. He was swinging through low stuff that was like practically in the dirt and just whiffing. But now he's just like, I mean, he's working walks. He's hitting everything in different parts of the zone. He's not trying to do too much. It's just really fun to watch and good to see him. Hopefully he hasn't played himself into a trade prematurely, but you know, it's been a bright spot, especially I think it's kind of lifted the A's in general, as they're going the same way as Sean Murphy's going.
Yeah, and it seems like some of the guys have kind of turned it up lately too, with this recent hot streak. Like Kemp has kind of turned it up, and Sky Bold has like come out of nowhere to like learn how to hit.
And I love being proven wrong on that.
Me too. Like, I think it was like when he was still in the phase where he was hitting like 91 or something like that, you know, like the classic 0.91, the Sky Bold average or whatever. He was like, I thought he was going to be a career 100 hitter. I just thought like, this is all we've seen.
Yeah.
And at one point I tweeted that, I was like, you know, I think he's proven he can't hit at MLB level.
Yeah.
And then like a few days later, I don't know, but like the past 10 days or, you know, maybe 2 weeks with the break and his injury, you know, he's been doing solid. I think he's had 3 dingers in the past like 3 weeks or something like that. Like, yeah.
He's got as many, he's got more home runs than Christian Pache.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like,
if he told me that was going to be the case by now, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, no way.
But it's honestly watching him and Kemp, same thing. Yeah. There's so much that goes into the mentality of it. And you can see that he's playing with more confidence. He's not afraid to swing at different pitches that he's struggled against. And he's a different player now than he was a couple weeks ago. Because before, it kind of just seemed like he was scared. He was scared, not just at the plate, but scared to make jumps in the outfield, kind of scared to take leads on base. And it just like that mental block would make him make boneheaded plays.
Yeah.
But it's good to see him get past that, because, you know, I love being wrong about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I think Caprillion has been pitching pretty well lately too. I think I saw something where he had like a 2.05 or something like that over a few starts or something like that. Like,
he's real good. And I'm a big believer in his stuff, because like, it looks good. I hope that he can, because you can tell that he focuses a lot on strikeouts. Yeah. I want to be a big strikeout guy. And he said it in post game, like, I want to be a strikeout guy and prove I'm a strikeout guy. You don't have to be.
Yeah.
I would much rather you go 6 or 7 innings and go like the Cole Irvin, because he's got good stuff to.
Yeah, it's hard for him to get, he can't even get into the, like, past the 6th inning, basically. Yeah.
Because it's crazy, because he, like, it's the frustrating, like, a young pitcher thing where it's like 0-2 count real quick. And then he kind of nibbles, foul off some good pitches. Suddenly it's an 8-pitch at bat, 3-2 count, and you lose him on a walk. And that's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of young pitchers, I think it's really interesting. I mean, they developed Irvin. They picked him out of, they got him for cash from the Phillies, and that turned into like a fan. I think he's like number 9 in the American League in ERA. They held on to Blackburn, developed him. You know, they made Frankie into what he is. Like, who do you think is maybe next on, you know, I really liked, I remember there was that one series in Detroit. It was like Logue and Adrian Martinez had like back-to-back really good starts. I was like, oh man, they are stacked. But then I look at their numbers and it's not as, I think Martinez has like a 5. Let me pull it up. I just was looking at it.
Martinez is scary because he's
kinda, got a 5.5 ERA and a 1.4 WHIP, and that's like, woof, that's brutal, man.
And he's kind of stunk it up at various times in Vegas too, which is even scarier.
No, that's what I mean. Those are his numbers in Vegas.
That's crazy. So it's like, but he's also shown flashes like a big league pitcher.
Dude, he looked so good in Detroit. I was like, who is this guy? This guy's amazing.
Like, oh, well, you know, we know who Detroit is now. Yeah. And it kind of tempers it a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as development guys,
Or who do you just think? Because I know you pay a lot of attention to the minor leagues, right? Like, who do you?
Quite a bit. I really like Logue's stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that if he, what bit him in the middle of the year or in the middle of his trajectory was that he was getting bit by the long ball and it was just killing him.
That's what happened here too when he came back, right? He just like throws up meatballs, right? It's just
random like, meatballs. Yeah. But man, his stuff looks good. And they've got so many like good options in pitching in general that he doesn't necessarily have to be a starter. I think he'd be a good reliever. And I think there's a lot of guys that kind of fall where like, you know, when Honeywell comes back, he's going to hopefully, as long as his arm works, he's going to be able to slot in somewhere and eat innings. And I think it's going to be a cool dynamic with just various arms that we haven't seen a whole lot of. And it's kind of like Acevedo this year is just blindsided everyone as being a dominant.
Dude, he's like unbelievable. He's putting up some crazy numbers, dude. Like people can't hit him, dude. It's wild.
It's weird. Cause like, I thought one of the biggest mistakes the A's made when they started like, you know, bringing back the old guys is like, why didn't the A's bring back Petit?
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, here's Acevedo instead. And I was kind of thinking, I don't know about that.
Well, also when, who was that? Adeles Guerra, when he got hurt, I thought that was going to be a big deal too, dude. I was like, oh man.
Because on paper, he looked like, hey, this guy could be the setup pitcher. And then he went down and I'm like, oh, well, I liked Jimenez like right out of the gate.
Dude, I really want him to come back soon, dude. He's fun to watch too. He's like a great, he's like an energy, like he seems like a closer to me, man.
I don't know. Absolutely. I love his stuff. They call it a curveball slider, whatever that breaking ball is sick. And if he's able to kind of tunnel those two pitches together, I can't imagine that too many guys can hit that because. He throws gas and then he snaps that thing off and it's just unfair. So it's a lot of cool stuff. And I mean, Zach Jackson's a lot of the same where you like, he's got intensity, a little wild at times, but he's got intensity and he's got good stuff. And it's just like, there's so many interesting arms that have kind of come out of the woodworks this year. Like I even just thinking back to April, we thought that the worst part of the team was going to be the bullpen.
Yeah.
A bunch of nobodies. So we're like, well, a bunch of nobodies and then AJ Puck.
No, it was like a million rookies. Yeah. It was just like literally like all rookies. Yeah.
He's like approaching 30 rookies. Yeah. And then AJ Puck, who at the time we thought was made of glass, and Lou Trevino, who no one trusted. So it was just like, well, this is going to be, we're going to just watch this bullpen.
It was a disaster. Yeah.
Oh, a bunch of games. And they really haven't this year. I mean, there's been a couple rough ones, but for the most part, it's mostly been like, hey, the A's are losing and they put in a long man and he doesn't perform and then they get blown out. But it hasn't been a whole lot of like blowing it by the closer, crooked number that you'd expect or that we expected at the beginning. They've been pretty dependable. When the team's doing bad or not great at the major league level, you like look at the minors and you're just like, man, this team in 3 years is going to be sick. And I kind of feel that way. I don't know if it's just like part of the delusion of everything. Like there are so many players that there are players that are doing well in the minors. And then there's players that have kind of underperformed that are starting to heat up. I mean, like even just like watching Max Muncy highlights, he looks electric and out of nowhere, just it feels like things are coming together. Every Langlier's highlight feels like, man, this guy is,
he just seems like a big leaguer. Like he just seems like a big leaguer who's just trapped in AAA for some reason.
That some reason is that you've got the sickest organizational catching depth in the league by far. But he could go. I mean, it's kind of scared me what the A's might do to try to fit them both in the lineup if Murphy survives the deadline. Just because like Langlier's has played the outfield in the past
It can make Murph DH, like, you know, but Murph loves to catch. Murph loves to be behind the plate, though.
Exactly. So. It just feels weird to
split
time when you've got two incredible catchers.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they could just, like, both suit up and take turns, like, every batter or something.
Well, Tyler Soderstrom, I think it's – Melissa said Soderstrom. She pronounces Soderstrom, so I don't know. I think it's Soderstrom. I always call him Soderstrom.
I go back and forth, but yeah. I'll say it however, you know. If you mix it up, I mean, we've been saying Canna wrong for –
That was so funny, dude. And then, like, the wife – well, it was funny because Canna said that on the air, and then his wife's like, no, it's Canna. It's not Kenya or Kanya or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think Mr. Kanya, I think he takes it more as a joke, and at least that was my interpretation of it. But I'll say people's names however they want me to pronounce it.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I mean, I'm sure I've been saying certain names wrong in my head just like over and over again, and just like, I mean, even just like Henry Bolte.
Yeah, that was where I was thinking too. I was like, Melissa, I was like, is it Bolte? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, it's Bolte now until you tell it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Soderstrom, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, you want him at first base or catcher? What do you think?
Absolutely first base.
Yeah, I think so too.
One thing that could derail him is injuries, which he's kind of been beat up behind the plate. And now that Susak has been drafted, he's kind of been forced into that role of, hey, you're not going to play catcher anymore. You might every once in a while, but there's no reason for you to play everyday catching anymore. So let's get your bat developed. Let's get you to be, I mean, there it's a black hole at first base for the A's right now. Like, don't get me wrong, Seth Brown and all the fill-ins have done well, but there's not a first baseman. Right. I mean, the fact that you've got Matt Davidson in the conversation to play first base still, and Stephen Vogt to eat innings at first base. Yeah. Kind of scary.
It's funny. It's like, damn, they really miss Tristram Bethancourt. That's how bad it is.
And they've all the first basemen the A's this year at the major league level, and all these guys who are like athletic and can get by with their athleticism. But then you like watch them take certain plays, and you're just like, that. I mean, I don't play professional baseball, so I can play first base better than you. But that doesn't look like what I've watched other first basemen do.
Yeah.
We've seen it, especially like Pinder, like obviously he's dealt a bad hand trying to, you know, being plugged into first base, but that pickoff attempt and then like the short hop and not being able to play it, it's like, it's like,
and then that's how Noisy got sent down again today because he can't play defense. It's like, damn, he can't really hit. He can't really do much, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I really like the way
he started out so hot though. It was crazy.
Yeah. I think that the league's kind of changed how they pitch him, which has made it a little bit tougher. And then he's not playing every day, so it's hard to make those adjustments with the league. He was playing really good defense since he got called up. He went like a long stretch without any errors, and then it just kind of came apart again. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily his fault. He obviously puts a lot of effort into it, but you know that's how the shuffle goes.
Do you want to see Pache get called back up?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
Bolt's like making them hold their horses a bit because he's actually hitting again.
Well, there's just like, you look at like what the outfield is right now and you think Laureano could potentially be traded. Piscotty probably is at the end of his serviceable time, but like, he's been hitting well. Obviously he had
had the dinger. The Steven.
Yes, Steven. Kemp isn't really an outfielder. He's kind of just like an athletic guy that goes out and left.
And yeah, it's like if only you had to catch the ball, that'd be fine. But there's also the throwing aspect. Yeah.
Kind of just like, well, when you think about it, it's like there's a lot of positions open in the outfield potentially, and there could be more opening up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Pache was trying to fight for like a middle infield position right now, I'd be a little more scared because, like, you know, you want to get – it's getting crowded with, like, even Jeter Bride coming out of nowhere. And Nick Allen and Machine.
Jonah Bryan's got to change his number. I can't take the 77, dude. I can't take it.
I feel like we're still in spring training, but
me too. Yeah, that's how I feel.
He's got his eye. He's got his eyes on somebody who's in trade talks. He's like, hey, I call dibs.
That's when funny. Yeah. I'll go for that. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, like, honestly, you mentioned the outfield thing. It's like, yeah, the first base, it's pretty much, I feel like they have catchers and they have Nick Allen, and then everything else, they got holes. They got to figure out everything else, you know?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of guys that can play different things.
Yeah.
So, you know, Pache is a center fielder. Yeah. He could be plugged in elsewhere, but he is a center fielder.
Yeah.
And if he gets called up, doesn't matter who's out there, he is the center fielder. He is their best option at center. And there's really not that much other in the organization where you think like, wow, this is, there's someone that could play center better, which is good. I think as long as he comes up, and he really doesn't have to do much. If he gets called back up and he's able to hit 230 and swipe some bags, then you take it.
Yeah, for sure.
So
his defense is just so good.
Yeah. It's just so good. And you felt it right once he got called down. It's just like, man.
Because Skyball had some bad misplays too. He had some like weird turnarounds. Like,
yeah, just like weird throws.
You mean like 360s in the outfield? Not really, but you know, the shoulder turn. When you turn your shoulders twice in a, that's not good. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Just like that, like that game of inches is kind of the thing that like frustrates me watching Elvis a lot this year. It's just like, man,
I've been pleasantly actually. I feel like he's way better than I thought he was gonna be. You know,
yeah. I had to look it up because I was like, what pace is he on right now for doubles?
Oh.
He's on pace to have the second most doubles in a single season in his career.
That's wild. That is wild. Yeah.
If you told me that at the beginning of the year, I'd be like, no way.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, like, you know, now he's forcing the conversation. Hey, I should be playing every day and hitting in the upper part of this lineup, which gets you closer and closer to that Albatross contract vesting next season. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch and see how they approach that.
All right. It's got a couple more for you. I know you got a couple of young, I don't know how you're doing all these tweets with two kids under 2 years old or whatever, but pretty good on you.
It's a lot of, child neglect. No, I'm just kidding. It's a lot of, I like to consider them my interns. So I bounce ideas off them, and they're mostly.
Yeah, you run the tweet by them, like, hey, does this hit? Is this a good tweet? Yeah.
I'll let them. And sometimes, you know,
cheap labor.
Typos on them. So anytime someone wants to call out a typo on any of my 6,000 tweets, it's you're making fun of a 2-year old.
Yeah, the baby had the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One thing I want to talk about is Nick. I mean, we mentioned Nick Allen. Do you want to see him long term at second base or shortstop? Where do you think he's better suited?
I like him at second base more.
Yeah. Me too.
I think ultimately,
the A's also don't have a shortstop. They really don't have anything. Yeah, unless Nick Allen is the guy.
I haven't watched a whole lot of Max Muncy because he's a little harder to watch. Just like. Because he's at the lower levels, but if he is at least somewhat serviceable at short and could be plugged in there, then I'm all for having Nick Allen play second and Max Muncy over at short. Which is kind of it's so funny to think that there's kind of another hole in short right now, because there was so long where it felt like the A's were just loaded up with shortstops that were going to be majorly like.
Still can't believe they let Semien go, man. Well, I can't believe it, but it's also like, damn.
It felt like at the beginning of the year, we're like, oh, well, this kind of worked out. Like, I hate to see him struggle, but like the A's dodged a bullet here. And then he turns it on and we're like, okay, well, maybe the A's probably should have signed him. But I mean, like even thinking about like the Addison Russell days and stuff, you like look at all these shortstops that were so promising and you're like, wow, the A's have all these shortstops and we'll just have the best one play. They went
from Tejada to Crosby and then just kept on going. Yeah.
and then Elvis Andrus. I think Nick Allen, I mean, Nick Allen can play anywhere, I'm sure, and be fine. But I like him at second.
Yeah, I like him at second too. I feel like he's just I don't know if it's just because he's small and it's just like a physical bias. I'm just like, oh, this guy looks like a second baseman or something, but he looks great over there, dude.
Yeah, and I think you can kind of hide like the way that the game plays now. You kind of need more of a bat at short and second base. You can kind of hide your guy who's kind of like that slap hitting, like working walks, laying down sack bunts. You can hide him at second. And that's how I think Nick Allen kind of profiles a little bit more. He's still got pop. He can still come through.
Yeah, I like him. He's fun to watch, man. Like, I remember waiting forever for Nick Allen to like to come up, and it's fun to watch him, dude. He's good. Yeah.
He's a lot of fun. I mean, even watching him in the Olympics and stuff, you're just like, this guy's a big leaguer. You can tell. And even though he looks 12, this guy.
Look at us being optimistic about the worst team in the American League. How about that? Yeah.
The best team in the last 7 games.
just want to wrap up. What are you kind of looking for? I think in the next heading into the deadline, I mean, I guess, you know, they got a 3-game set with the White Sox. I think Frankie, there's a chance he could throw, what is it, on I don't know, they haven't announced a starter on Sunday, but I'm trying to think, when was his last day? I don't know if that's 5 days rest for him.
Oh, his next start would profile on the day of the deadline, because they don't play on the A's don't play.
Oh, that's right. They have another off, the second off day.
So they it's got a weird spot for Frankie, especially if they're waiting down to the final hours. He could be preparing for the start against the Angels while also preparing to get dealt in that same day. And he could find out 3 hours before first pitch, hey, you're sticking around. And you're starting tonight.
Or I wonder if the A's will just be like, you're for sure not pitching today, Frankie. We'll just figure this out, kind of a thing. You know?
See, that
just...
would be polite of them, but who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think for Frankie, it really just depends on when Castillo goes. Yeah. He's the obvious number one of this trade deadline for pitching. So whenever he falls, then Montas is probably going to follow pretty quickly after. So it'll be interesting when he goes and what teams are in on it. Cause there's a couple teams that seem, at least in rumors, that there's a lot of teams that could use a guy like Montas, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. But I think everybody would love him. Yeah. So yeah, it's a Cap versus Lance Lynn tomorrow. Yeah. And then on Saturday it's Blackburn versus Johnny Cueto. And then Sunday, the A's are still TBD versus Dylan Cease. So the White Sox got some good pitchers. Paul Blackburn's got to turn around. It's crazy what's happening. Yeah, Paul, it's like as soon as he was named an all-star, it's just been downhill, you know.
His cutter looks a lot more hittable than it's been the first part of the season. I don't know if it's just like he's lost a little bit of break on some of his pitches. The big question mark with a lot of these pitchers like Blackburn is like, you've never pitched this much in a season.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of in the dog days at the end of the summer. And it's like, hey, you still have X amount of starts left.
Yeah, dude, you still got like 12 starts left. Like, yeah,
you've got a ways to go. Can you hang? Because I mean, it might be different after the deadline. They might decide to start skipping starts and yada yada. But I don't know. I think he's still got his stuff. He still pitches with confidence.
Yeah.
He still produces weak contact and comes right at guys. The walks are a little concerning, how they're up a little bit, but I use this term, ironically normally, but he's still a gamer when he goes out there. It's like you could still tell that he's going to be competitive no matter how good his stuff is that day. So I wouldn't be surprised if he bounces back. Hopefully he can do it this next start. But you know, who knows? It'll be a fun series this weekend because all those matchups should be. Lance Lynn's having a tough go right now.
Yeah.
And it's Johnny Cueto. So that's box market. You know,
just entertainment. Just watching him throw the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. It should be a fun series. The White Sox have been disappointing this year. I think a lot of people thought the White Sox would be like runaway division winners, and they're not.
They're spending a lot of money, I think, too.
Spending a lot of money. I think the A's could rattle off a couple more wins, and it would be nice to see. I'd like to see him take 2 out of 3 against the White Sox and then roll into Anaheim. And I don't know, maybe if the going goes right, then the A's can could pass up the Angels in Anaheim.
That would be crazy.
It would be crazy. That would be winning the first round of the playoffs. relative to how the season.
All right, James. Well, this James Carroll, make sure to follow him on Twitter at Uprooted Oakland. Thank you so much, James. I really appreciate the time and talking A's. It's always fun to talk A's. So
yeah, thank you, Alex. And thanks everyone who's followed and joined right in and listened to me ramble on and on for 6,000 plus tweets.
Yeah, every game, make sure to follow him. All right, thanks a lot, James.
Thank you.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.